I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
The mentality monsters have done it again. Chelsea beat Manchester United to win their third straight FA Cup. I'm not crying. You are. On today's show, we pick the game apart and discuss the consequences for both these fantastic sides in seasons to come. But for now, all eyes are on this weekend in the WSL. Rach, there's no point messing around, all right? I'm in Jamaica at the moment, living my best life. I've got a can of Red Stripe here. The only disappointment and upset for me was watching the FA Cup final in the back of a 12-seater saloon on the way to Montego Bay and seeing my beloved side fall to defeat against Chelsea again. And I can't tell you how disappointed I am to be saying those words, because I really didn't think it was going to go down that way. I mean, obviously a huge occasion, absolutely, you know, mammoth crowds, 77,000 people plus packing into Wembley. And I think that, if anything, is just an amazing achievement. When you go to Wembley now, for the past four occasions, we've seen sold out crowds from the Finalissima, the Euros final, the USA game, and now obviously at the FA Cup. And yeah, I mean, the atmosphere there looked absolutely wild. I mean, I'm really gutted to say this, but I would have rather have been there for that 2 hours than in Jamaica. I mean, Rach, you were there. What was the atmosphere like? What was the vibe?
Firstly, we are not sponsored by Red Stripe, and other beverages are available. Very important to point out. I tell you what, despite having gone to Wembley numerous times now with over 70,000 fans, it's still not something I think we ever get used to. And, you know, turning up to a game over 3 hours before kickoff and Wembley Way is already busy and there's already fans out. They're already at the various, like, there was some good fan engagement stuff. The FIFA trophy was on tour as well. So that was there and people could queue up, huge queue, to get your picture taken with the trophy. And almost
I
equally,
saw a cute little photo with you and Soph on that trophy.
Yeah.
Very cute. I liked it.
And there was an almost equally big queue to get a photo taken with Carly Telford, who was kind of part of that FIFA event. So she was busy before kickoff. But yeah, I mean, it's just, I still don't get used to it. It's still an amazing thing, but it's so nice that the sold out FA Cup final is no longer a dream. Like, there's so many things now where you're like, right, done that, take that. And I think they said it was a record or a historical, you know, record, world record breaking number for a domestic cup game. So that was pretty cool. I mean, I'll be honest, it wasn't like the most exciting FA Cup final on the pitch. But yeah, just being in Wembley, the sun shining, really good. Like, both ends had Man United one end, Chelsea the other. They had DJs playing absolute bangers in the lead up to the game. So all in all, like, it was just an awesome day out.
It's just, I think it's that every time you hit Wembley Way, there's always a bit of sun and there's always a vibe. There's always Box Park popping off. There's always a band going. The atmosphere has just always been insane. And I think, you know, yeah, you've got this record breaking crowd. You've got United's first major final. You then go on to have Chelsea winning the trophy three times in a row. VAR is being used for the first time, which obviously played a huge part. I mean, it makes sense really to start with the first Leah Goldson chance. I mean, ruled offside, and but I think that for me was a really beautiful moment because it was Man United. We knew what we were going to get then. We knew that we were going to get a Man United on the front foot. They were going to take the game to Chelsea, and this was going to be one tasty competition. But I think we had kind of different views on it.
So I think, I mean, first of all, the start was incredible, and I was delighted with myself because I snapped all of the shots. I got all of the celebrations. I was like, oh my God, these pictures are going to be amazing. And then I got ruled offside. And the poor photographer next to me, after the whistle had kind of gone, he was like, Jesus Christ, will you hang on a second? Like, we've literally just come around from doing like team photos, just to give you an idea. We're like running off the pitch, trying to get ourselves back settled. I'm lucky I wasn't that far away from where the team photos were taken. Trying to get yourself settled. And bloody 26 seconds later, Leah Goldson's already scored a goal. So unfortunately, all of those great photos I'd actually managed to get were kind of redundant because I hadn't scored, but I did use them. I think with the benefit of VAR as well, it did show that Ella Toon was just offside during the build-up, and actually the referee, the lino, had flagged it. So hats off to the lino for actually catching that in real time, because it was tight. Actually, I think the refs were pretty good yesterday. I think shout out to them, because I know we've talked in the past about, you know, needing standards to step up and funding to step up, and I actually think they were on the biggest stage. They did a good job. But yeah, I loved the beginning. It started with such, the start was at such intensity, and I think Man United had Chelsea on the back foot early, but it just went a bit flat kind of after those kind of flurry of moments. It just felt like it went a little bit flat, and I think it was a lot to do with when Chelsea did have the ball, they just kind of struggled to make any real clear-cut chances, find each other. It was a little bit scrappy in midfield at times, but Man United did have the better of the first half and probably the first 50-60 minutes. I thought they had the better of. And it just goes to show the fine margins. It's so like symbolic that goal was ruled offside by inches. You know, we've talked about that before. And yeah, I've heard a lot of comments and seen a lot of comments for Man United saying it was literally a matter of inches. But yeah, I just felt like we were all kind of chatting about it during the game. It just felt a little bit flat because it was almost like, damn, we didn't get that chance. And then both sides were kind of like a little bit of back and forth. I think Chelsea were happy to let Man United have possession, let them kind of feel them out a little bit. But yeah, I think maybe because it wasn't a case of both sides playing really well and battling, it was a little bit more of Chelsea just kind of sitting back a little bit, were a little bit scrappy when they were in possession. And then United kind of struggling to carve out too many more really clear chances. So maybe that's why, for me, it just felt a little bit flatter.
Well, I'm going to set out my case for why I thought it was a fantastic first half. I think, I mean, we've done this before, the whole case set up, and I know that I'm going to win. So it is what it is.
You're a lawyer, it's not fair.
But Well, an ex-lawyer. So, yeah, that those days are behind me now. But I did think, I think that, you know, the first big chances went to United. And I think credit to Skinner and also the squad for not letting the occasion get to them. I think, you know, both of us spoke to Katie Zellum earlier on during the week as part of a round table that we did with her. And, you know, she's talking about, you know, they do obviously get nervous. They have the excitement, the build up. They're going to do the Wembley walkthrough and the lead up to the game to run through kind of, you know, how it's going to look, how it's going to feel. Because, you know, this is United squad that weren't formed 5 years ago. And to go from that to then this kind of stage. And obviously a lot of the Man United players have played at Wembley and big occasions in the summer last year. But they didn't look scared. They didn't look nervous. They looked like they looked like a side that were the underdogs, because they just played like a side that had nothing to lose. And I really respected that about them. I think the Leah Galton chance, I think, would have absolutely helped bolster confidence. I mean, having a clear goal essentially in the first minute is that's pretty good going. And I think that's why I found it such a great half, because even then I was looking at the stats in 38 minutes, Man United had 5 attempts on goal to Chelsea's 1. So not only were they creating chances, but they were also nullifying the threat that Chelsea posed. I mean, Sam Kerr wasn't getting much of a look in for large parts of the first half, which I thought was an amazing achievement. I mean, she's their biggest threat. I mean, as soon as you cancel her out, you've probably won half the battle. But yeah, I think we've got to talk about VAR from a different perspective and in a scenario that I think it possibly should have been used. I mean, there was a Paris entry into the box. There was a very big leg out from old Charlesy. It was unusual, I think, in that circumstance for VAR not to be used. I mean, to me, it looked like it was inside the box. Even on the replays, it looked inside the box.
It happened right in front of me. Like, that was the end I was at. And for me, the foul started outside the box, which is why I thought it hadn't been given. I thought VAR had been... So, thing is that we don't always know what's being communicated to the referees during the match. So, sometimes I think when it is dubious, then the VAR team are like, right, we need to look at it again. We need to look at it at another angle. And that's when the referee's like, hang on a second, VAR are re-looking at it. And that's when we have a situation where you need to go look at it. Sometimes the VAR check is so quick, or they see it and are happy that it is outside the box. That's communicated to the referee straight away. And we don't really have time for this VAR check situation where you see it up on the screen and you know what's going on. So part of me wonders if maybe that happened.
But do you not think it's almost worth, like, VAR is being used for the first time in the final, and you just think, do you want to get your money's worth? Like, let's do like an Arsenal Wolfsburg type situation where we just chuck VAR everything. Like, just might as well, really. But I think we've also got to give a massive shout out to the goalkeepers as well. I mean, Mary Earps pulling off an absolute worldie of a save. Like, the footwork that she had to do to get back from it was a Lauren James looping header that looked like it was just about to creep in at the far post, and then all of a sudden Mary Earps out of nowhere just superwoman's it, knocks it onto the post and it goes out. And I just credit to her. But then also at the other end, I mean, oh, Anne Katchenberger. I mean, there was a cheeky little deflected ball and she's moved her feet as well to try and get in line with it. And it's kind of deflected out. And she's the reaction speed on getting that ball out, I thought, was absolutely incredible. So credit and shout out to the goalkeepers. I have to, for a goalkeeper
that,
union.
That situation was one of those chaos moments where the ball kind of pinged around, like there were players on the floor. May Letizia and Eriksen were in a heap on the ground. The ball was stuck under Millie Turner's feet. She was trying to get it out. And you could see Berger kind of shifting a little bit, and she had shifted to where she thought the shot was going to go, and then it kind of took a deflection. So how she kind of got down and dipped her hand to palm it out was incredible. And same for Mary Earps. I think a lot of people thought that had hit the post, but no, she had managed to backpedal so quickly and get a fingertip to it. And just like I said, because there weren't loads of really clear-cut on-target shots, and yet the goalkeepers were still able to pull out those big saves when maybe they hadn't had that much to do in the half. So yeah, it just goes to show, like, both sides, how close they were. And I think Man United can really hold their heads up high because, as you said, it didn't look like a team that hadn't been in a final before. They played with such confidence. I thought their tactics in the first half particularly were really, really good. They'd seen that Chelsea, in their last couple of games, have not started well. And the teams that kind of... I mean, Liverpool did capitalise. They scored. Everton didn't. But I think Mark Skinner recognised that if you press Chelsea early and quickly... you could get something, and they came so close to actually getting something, and I thought that was really, really well done. And I think May Letizia and Millie Turner were superb in the back line, and they're such young players as well. Just to think how long they've got that they could be giving to Manchester United and playing that level of football, particularly May Letizia, is such an exciting prospect. So I think, yeah, like many of the Man United players have come out and said today, it was fine margins. And hopefully that just lights a fire under them, because they know how close.
Oh, massively. And I think, you know, Mark Skinner was sort of saying, you know, this is a side that we want to be like. This is, you know, we want to be where Chelsea are today. And, you know, it was interesting because I think, you know, Mark Skinner picked up on the fact that it was essentially just that one moment of really switching off that completely was the nail in the coffin. Well, that and also not taking a chance in the first half. But, you know, I think they did manage to keep Chelsea at bay. They did manage to keep them quiet, and they appreciated that actually Chelsea are a side who are very, very comfortable out of possession, just waiting and biding their time for those opportunities. And when they get those opportunities, they're so bloody clear. Clinical.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Sam Kerr, destroyer of dreams for the Man United fan base. I mean, who else? If you could have put your house, your car, your whatever valuable possession that you have, you would put it on Sam Kerr to have been the match-winning decider of this game. And who else but Harder on the assist? And who else before that assist? Wrighton. I mean, out of the three players that you would have... that you would have put any kind of prediction on, it would have been them three. And what a goal it was. I mean, it was a switch off. Sam Kerr for the tap in at the back post from a beautiful Pinnell Harder delivery. I mean, Rach, you were there. I mean, the explosion in the Chelsea crowd was horrible and heartbreaking for me to watch, but I'm assuming the wave of blue across the air at the stadium must have been a beautiful sight.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I know we were saying that it was one moment. I mean, when Pernilla Harder came on, it was a game changer. They shifted their format slightly so that she could be more, give more support to Sam Kerr. I don't think they were getting the same kind of creative passing in midfield that they needed. And Sam Kerr wasn't getting any service. I think she had like 9 touches in the first half, which is a testament to how well Millie Turner and Maya Letizia handled her. But equally, a player like Sam Kerr only needs one moment. And she's a big game player and she scores in the important moments. And she loves scoring in FA Cup finals. And she loves scoring against Manchester United. So put them all together. But yeah, I think, you know, obviously credit to her for scoring the goal. You know, she's the kind of player Chelsea need in those moments. But Pernilla Harder, I thought when she came on, looked so dangerous. She had a chance herself. That was passed in from Sam Kerr and was just slightly behind her. And she couldn't get enough power on the shot. And Mary Earps was able to serve. She had a couple of opportunities actually, Harder. So she did look the most dangerous. And it's no real surprise that the goal kind of came through her. But my God, yeah, the Chelsea fans behind me, I kind of saw it happening in slow motion. I got the shot of Sam Kerr through the net. And then Pernilla Harder was running backwards, kind of beckoning to Sam Kerr. So I followed her. And then I was like, where is Sam? And realised she was doing a bloody backflip, which most of us missed because there were so many players around. And the key amazing iconic shot was got from some of the club photographers on the side. There's some brilliant photos floating around. But yeah, she pulled out the backflip. And it was a moment worthy of that kind of celebration. But I do hope she stops doing it now ahead of the World Cup. But yeah, it was, you could see how much it meant to Chelsea. They knew, like Emma Hayes said, it was a grind. And they knew how hard and how deep they were going to have to dig to beat this Manchester United side. And you could see from every player how much that goal meant to them. So yeah, I think it was a pretty special moment.
Well, I think we've got to talk about the tactics that kind of came through from the second half. I think it was very much a kind of game that was won almost by the substitutions that both sides had. I mean, you know, I had Williams coming on for Paris, which I thought was a really good choice. I mean, that's not to say that I didn't think Paris was doing well. She was definitely causing a threat on the wings, but I think when Williams came on, it brought that extra layer of physicality. I mean, within seconds, she'd already like bodied Cuthbert to the ground to kind of show a bit more of an aggressive attacking mentality there. So I thought that was a really good choice for me. And then I think, obviously, after the goal had gone in, it felt like, you know, Hayes's biggest priority then was kind of battening down the hatches, just making sure that they were defensively going to be robust because, you know, you're only 1-0 up. Anything could happen and anything could take you through to extra time. So, yeah, we had 72 minutes, Charles coming off for Carter, and then it was Buchanan, wasn't it? It was Lauren James coming off for Buchanan in the 88th minute as well. So it just felt like they were just throwing defensively. It was like it was a classic part of the bus. And I think that definitely shored them up. But I think the last 10, 15 minutes of the second half, Man United found they found sixth gear. It was incredible to kind of watch them not want to give this opportunity up to be their first major tournament. I mean, the chances that they had, I think they were just so unlucky, but it was a little bit too little, too late. They could have done better in the first half. And I think the second half was pretty catastrophic for them in the end. I'll get over it.
I actually thought that, like, I was surprised he took Keats off because I thought she looked so bright and so energetic. And I felt like that's what Man United needed. So I was a little bit surprised that Rachel Williams came on so early, actually. And then, yeah, as you touched on, the Pernilla Harder.
Oh, yeah, she normally comes on as sort of like as an impact sub sort of later on. But
yeah,
I think
the last 5 minutes. It was also Sophie Ingle, I think, that came on around the same time. And she kind of dropped a little bit deeper with Erin Cuthbert. So while obviously Harder gave the attacking outlet and the way that she was able to feed Sam Kerr, which Sam had been kind of lacking in the first half, Ingle equally was able to provide a little bit more defensive cover. And that was so important then when they did get the goal to have someone like that in the midfield to help kind of help them shore up a bit. But yeah, I thought it all came down really to the substitutes, didn't it?
Massively. And I think, when we speak about Sam Kerr and the kind of impact that she has, I mean, when we talk about the substitutes coming on, it was definitely a case of, you know, the second half being that was the integral feature. That was exactly where the game was won, essentially. But yeah, I mean, going back to Sam Kerr, I mean, Rach, we spoke a little bit about this before we jumped on the pod. I mean, apparently you've been getting a little bit of grief. Sam Kerr won the Football Writers Player of the Year award. Quite a few suggesting that it should have been Rachel Daly, given the goals, the mammoth amount of goals that she scored this season. But Yeah, it does seem a little bit unusual. But then when you look at when it's, I think it's not the quantity of goals that Sam Kerr scores, which is again amazing. But it is when she does it. It is the timing of the goals and the significance of every goal that she scores, because they just seem to occur at moments where, I don't know, your back's against the wall, or you don't think they're going to pull it out of the bag for that one time that they never do. But yeah, what's the grief that you've been getting, mate? What's happening? Why? Who's bullying you?
It's not that. It's you know, the typical fans that you know, if you say anything against their team, then you have no idea what you're talking about. And it's funny because like we even said, obviously, absolutely love Sam Kerr. You know how much we love her, how amazing we think she is. But we just felt that this year, maybe Bunny Shaw or Rachel Daly deserved it for what they've done for the teams that they're in. And the goals, I know Rachel Daly and Aston Villa aren't second in the league, which is where Chelsea currently are. But equally, they're punching massively above their weight and scoring goals in very important games for them as well. So it's not a slight on Sam Kerr. I mean, bloody hell, aren't we lucky to have so many good players in this league? It's incredible. There used to be similar conversations around Vivian Miedema when she was back at her best, banging in the goals. And then she'd have a season where she didn't score as many goals, and then everyone decided she was crap. Like, I'm not saying Sam Kerr's crap. Sam Kerr's been like the key for Chelsea this season. We know that.
Well, I mean, one person who wasn't mincing her words over all the praise that she heaped on Sam Kerr after the game was, of course, our beloved Emma Hayes. She said Sam is willing to take responsibility in the big moments, and that she absolutely is. I mean, everyone was heaping praise on her afterwards, but also a lot of praise obviously went to Peniel Harder as well for the impact that she created and obviously being a bit of a game changer. But I think going forwards now, I mean, I was just listening to Alex Scott and what she was saying after the game about, you know, this is both two teams that we're expecting to get into more FA Cup finals. But a lot of it is going to be dependent on who they retain sort of coming up to this the summer transfer window. So that'll be interesting to see. But yeah, a disappointing day for Man United. I mean, I saw them sort of walking up the stairs to go and collect their medals, and they looked a little bit deflated. But also, you know, credit to them. This is a medal that a lot of other teams haven't picked up. They're doing a lot of things right this year. And this is the first time there's been that expectation on them really to reach these kind of levels in the tournament. So I know I don't like to blow Man United's trumpet too much, but you know, congrats girls, that was a pretty amazing show. But now that that's over, now we've got the Conti Cup out the way, now we've got the FA Cup out the way, now the Champions League is kind of done and dusted for the English teams. What have we got next? The WSL bloody title race, which has got so spicy, so unbelievably hot in this weekend coming up. We've obviously got the big Man United derby. We've got Manchester United, Man City. We've also got the Chelsea-Arsenal fixture as well. So this is where this is crunch time. This is the business end. This is do or die, okay? And we were trying to work out all the different scenarios before we came on the pod about what could happen. Is it going to come down to the last fixture, or can it happen this weekend? So we basically come up with the scenario that if Man United lose against Man City and Chelsea win both of their fixtures, one against West Ham on Wednesday and the second against Arsenal on Sunday, they will walk away with the title. So essentially, this weekend is critical. I mean, it's a lot to ask. It's a lot to ask for Chelsea to win both of those games. It's, you know, it's still everything to play for. And it's a lot to ask also for Man United to make sure they pick up those points against City, because that's no mean feat either. So, but if those things don't happen, then it comes down to the final weekend, and then it's Man United Liverpool. And then we have, who's Chelsea's one?
Reading. And Arsenal have Aston Villa, and City have Everton.
It is. I mean, that's big. So, Rach, I'm going to throw to you for this bit, because I think you had the Champions League bit down.
Yeah, so Arsenal have a game midweek as well against Everton. If they win that, they will go above Man City on points, which means they could technically afford to lose to Chelsea. I mean, they'd have to win their last game against Aston Villa, but they could technically, like, losing against Chelsea at the weekend would not be catastrophic to their Champions League title, Champions League hopes, because they have a much better goal difference on City. So, yeah, there's a number of permutations out there. But I don't think Champions League would necessarily... Well, maybe it could be decided. Oh, God, if I get into that, I think it would involve Arsenal losing twice and City beating Man United and something. but it is equally tasty. And then down the bottom of the table, you know, relegation could also be decided this weekend. I don't want any of it to be decided this weekend, because we've had such an incredible season. I'd be so disappointed if it was decided the second last weekend. Like, just don't do that. But Leicester have West Ham. Spurs play Reading. Reading have to beat Spurs to be in with any hope of staying at the WSL. They have to beat them. But if Leicester beat West Ham, I think that might be it for Reading.
What I'm thinking is that actually the tastiest game out of the rest of the remaining fixtures could actually be Reading-Chelsea if it comes down to that last weekend, because Reading will be fighting for to be saved from the relegation and Chelsea will be fighting for the title.
Why is it not just one team we're worrying about? There's like one team. There's like five teams we have to think about of six teams of the variations of what might happen. So pardon our poor maths if we have made any mistakes. But I think that's right.
Well, if we're going to go to our, our analogy of the title race and where it's at the moment, I mean, I feel like we've got the two horses in the race, and it's going to come down to, I mean, those two big fixtures, the Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City, Man United. I mean, Rach, how are you calling that? How do you think that's going to go down that weekend?
Well, first of all, my analogy at the moment is, you know, those rodeo cowboys that are like riding a mad bull.
Oh my, where is this going?
Right? I just feel like there's just like a whole load of them in a ring and they're all just bouncing around the place and no one knows what the hell is going on. That's my analogy at the moment, because no one knows who's going to come out the gate first or who's going to be left last at this rate. But I think part of me thinks the fact that Chelsea have a midweek game against West Ham allows them to get back into it quicker and put the FA Cup behind them before, let's be honest, a massive fixture against Arsenal. We know Chelsea-Arsenal is always a massive fixture. So part of me thinks maybe it's better for them that they have the West Ham game to get going again. Mm-hmm. And part of me wonders then if for Man United, coming off this loss where they were so close into what is possibly one of the biggest games of the season for them, will be tricky. You know, they have to put those demons to bed. They have to forget about the disappointment. And they were so disappointed. Like, Mark Skinner looked angry post-match. I mean, I heard he threw his medal on the ground when he came down to the pitch. You know, yeah.
No.
So I feel like mentally they need to get their heads together now and try and put that behind them. And I know that's not easy because they have this is such a huge game, this Manchester derby for them. So they'll really need to refocus. And it's another new experience for them. It's not something that they've necessarily experienced before. A, being in a cup final, playing as well as they did, coming as close as they did, and having to go straight into a huge game that could potentially decide the title as well. So it's a lot for them and it's a lot of new experiences. So that will be, it's a very, very tough one to call. Man City have had a bit more time to prep. That is not an answer to your question. I apologise.
No, I mean, I imagine that you'd be sitting on the fence. I didn't imagine that you'd be throwing in an analogy like that to confuse and baffle everyone. But here we are. It's been a season of analogies, some of which have gone astray. Some have resonated with our audience. But I think, you know, the Man City game, I think, is going to be an absolute beast. I think, you know, Man United going into that fixture know that they have everything riding on that game. And I think they've got the two hardest fixtures now, because I think even though they're playing Liverpool on the Saturday afterwards on the 27th, I mean, Liverpool have just turned over Man City. And also Man City will be aware of them needing to pick themselves back up, and also how important those points are going to be in the Champions League fight. So, yeah, it's going to be a big weekend. I mean, Rach, which game are you going to? Like, what's your preference here? Where are you going to be?
I'm being sent to Spurs Reading. So I'm going to have like two eyes on, one eye on Man City, Man United, one eye on Arsenal-Chelsea, and then my third eye on the game that I'm actually at, which is Spurs-Reading.
Do you have enough laptops to cover all of those eyes?
Do I have enough eyes, Chloe? That's the problem. But it's a huge game as well. This is a huge game at the other end of the table. So plenty to choose from this weekend, but that's where I'll be.
What I'm struggling to understand is how the FA are going to decide where this trophy is going up and down the country, because it could be, I mean, essentially, I suppose it could only be at Chelsea this weekend, the Chelsea-Arsenal fixture. So the trophy could very well be at King's Meadow this weekend. And do I want to see Chelsea
lift
it?
They'll have a fake one. They'll have a fake one for the last weekend if it goes to that. They'll have a fake one somewhere and a real one somewhere, and no one will know which one's which.
Amazing. Well, it could be a very spicy weekend. Everything could be to play for on Sunday. We will definitely update you and run you through everything that's happened with the title race next week. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan in Jamaica. If you've got any question for us before then, please tweet us at Football Ramble. Rach is at Girls on the Ball. I am at Morgie_9. See you soon.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, where are you, the police?
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.